Hi, it is Diane, and it is Thursday, December 17th. I'm here with a noon group. So far, we have Tatiana and Aaron and Brian and Shelley. And let's just start with a quick, you know, round the room celebration check-in. How are things going, and what are you celebrating? Tatiana, do you mind going first?
No problem. So what was the question? Sorry.
Just a quick check-in and a celebration.
Sure. Check-in. Well, everyone's getting ready for the holidays. Alexander's with his dad for Christmas. But we've been working on some anxiety issues. And I think the topic for this week is extremely pertinent to that, because I've been observing a lot in terms of, you know, what triggers that anxiety.
So Tatiana, can I just ask, is it his anxiety or yours or both?
No, his.
His. Okay, great.
Yep. So,
okay. What are you celebrating?
I was going to get to that. Sorry. If there's anything to celebrate, is the fact that, you know, Alexander is open to being helped, and that I'm actively working on getting him that help that he needs.
Awesome. And I noticed, Tatiana, you do have some background noise. So do you have a way to kind of put us on mute when you're not talking?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, great. Thank you. Aaron.
Hey. So, let's see. I have missed the last two calls. I've just listened to the recordings. But the last time we talked, I was really working on the craziness and just the silliness going on in our car at
right.
the school and on the trip. And it's been awesome. And I can't take credit. My kids came up with a plan. I don't know if you remember, but we had we have a minivan, and all three want to sit in the middle, and nobody wants to sit in the back. And so everyone's sitting next to each other, and they're getting silly and wild and crazy, and it drives me insane. And so they came up with their own plan to rotate around and have whoever sitting in the back, they made a chart, put it in, taped it in the car, and they just enforced it themselves, and they're all happy. And it not only solved the car problem, but it also solved the problem of who gets to sit next to me at the dinner table, because you'd think most families would just have a place where you sit, but every single night it's, I want to sit by Mama, I want to sit by Mama. And so what they've decided is whoever sits in the back of the car then gets to sit next to me at dinner. And so it solved sort of both of those problems. So that's my big celebration, I think.
Well, and I think that sounds amazing, Aaron, and I know that you want to give them credit because they came up with a solution, but I'm celebrating the fact that you took it to them and said, hey guys, figure it out. This is a challenge. I know you can do it. What do you want to do? And they rose to the occasion, and that's awesome, and especially when it has that great extra side effect of solving any drama at dinner as well.
Right, thanks. Yeah, it was good.
Awesome. Okay, Brian, are you in a place where you can check in?
I am, and I guess the first thing I want to celebrate is that, Diane, you're working this week, even though Elaine's in Australia, so I'm not having to be coached by my wife this week, and I want to celebrate that, because that would be a disaster if she's coming to you on the call.
Okay, well, we'll have to make sure that if Jeremy doesn't, I have to remember to make sure that I don't ask Jeremy to cover for me on Thursdays at noon, because you're right, that would be a little bit awkward, wouldn't it?
No, not at all. There are no secrets there. And the other thing I want to celebrate, you know, so it's finals time for our daughter, who's a freshman, who was recently diagnosed with ADHD, and she's done really great this week with finals, preparing for everything, and is very, very positive. So that's awesome. For our youngest, Isaac, who also has ADHD, he's doing really good. He's had a couple little forgetful things lately, like leaving a backpack at home instead of taking it to school, leaving his lunch in the car instead of having his backpack. But overall, he's doing very, very well. We had very positive reports from his teachers. And then our middle child of five, Theo, also has ADHD. It has the one that's the most severe, and he's the one we struggle with the most, but and we're not saying we have a great system for it yet, but he has been more attuned to, he's had a lot of anger and emotional outbursts lately, and he's much more attuned to it, and we've noticed him at least trying some techniques. They're not necessarily the ones that are working the best, but we notice a lot of deep breaths when he's doing it, and he will at least verbalize that he's angry, even if he can't place it. And we had med checks with the doctor yesterday. That's one thing we focused on was, you know, he verbalized that he's been noticing it a lot lately and what he's been doing to try to control it. So, you know, the first step is identification. We're doing good on that, and then we just need to get a plan that works for everyone once we have that identification.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you guys, you just went down the list. Everybody's got something to celebrate, Brian. That's really great. Shelly, what's going on with you? What do you want to celebrate or update us on?
So I have a couple of things that I want to celebrate. One, since the last call, I had our annual IEP review for my son, who's 10, and that meeting went really well. We were all in agreement on, you know, where things should go and what things we needed to adjust. I still need to work with the school to make sure that they're all implemented, but we all agree and they're actually in the IEP of these are the things that we're going to do. And so that was really good that we could all see the same things. And then at the same time, we've also been working on adjusting my son's medication. And we were really struggling there for a while, but I feel like we're kind of over that hump and maybe working our way back to a productive place with his medication. So that's been really good to kind of see that, because I struggle with the medication piece and, you know, making him try new things and then, okay, it didn't work and let's try another one. So to get in a comfortable place there is very important to him and I think to our whole family, just to have sort of a calm with it. So those are the two celebrations that I have for
awesome. That's great. Well, congratulations, Shelly. It sounds like everybody, and I love this. I think, you know, I want to make sure, and I'm going to loop back with Elaine and Jeremy. I love the idea of starting with celebrations. It definitely shifts the energy in the group. And I know sometimes we show up and it's just kind of like, oh, we had such a terrible morning or such a terrible day. But, you know, if we can focus on something that's working, it really does shift our ability to really to problem solve and to focus in. And we're going to talk a little bit more about triggers and that sort of thing today, but I think it's important. And if you guys will allow me, you know, I don't have younger kids. I have older kids, but I want to celebrate, and I would love to celebrate with you guys, because today was the first day of finals for my kids, and I've got a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, and it was the first morning in a while that things have gone really smoothly, and I know it's because we all were really working hard to let it go as smoothly as possible. And, you know, my daughter went off to go take her first finals, and she, you know, we did a little meditating in the car to kind of help her manage her anxiety so that she can remember throughout the day to kind of keep focused on staying calm so that she can stay engaged with her tests. And then my son, while it's not a complete celebration, he was completely prepared to go have a conversation with his math teacher about whether or not he even really knew enough to take the math exam, whether he wanted to try to explore getting an extension or whether he needed to just go ahead and fail the final or what he needed to do. But he felt really good about having the conversation with his teacher and, you know, advocating for himself and asking for what he needed. And I think that even though it's not a fun thing to know your kid might fail a class, it still is great that he was able to feel okay about the situation and step up with it. So I appreciate you guys letting me celebrate out loud, but it was a good day today.
That's great. As another parent who has two teenagers taking high school finals this week, that's, you know, if they're comfortable where they are and they're heading forward with confidence, that's good.
Brian, thank you for validating me. I so appreciate that. I know you live with a coach. I appreciate that. Okay, so let's go back around and take aim. And, you know, just a reminder, we want to take aim on something specific, and we want to take aim on a challenge rather than a solution. We are going to talk about triggers today, and so you might consider taking aim on something you know tends to be a hot button for you or for one of your kids. And I'll talk a little bit about triggers and about knowing what triggers you in a minute. But let's just kind of quickly go back around and say, where do you want to take aim? Tatiana, can you start us out?
Sure. Well, continuing with what I said already, I want to take aim on fully understanding all of my son's triggers as it pertains to his anxiety. And when I say anxiety, I'm talking about he has, from what I can see, a lot of anxiety around performing, performing at school, you know, self-doubt. It seems like it's a self-imposed pressure to perform mm-hmm. at a specific level. And I want to know, you know, I want to get really curious about where that's coming from, you know, from his 8-year-old mind perspective.
Great, great. And so here's the thing, Tatiana, I think that as we're thinking about it today, even though the next thing you're going to do is to really maybe spend some time getting curious around him,
mm-hmm.
In the meantime, as you're working through the issue today, mm-hmm. maybe you come up with a couple of ideas and just kind of brainstorm among yourself and say, what are 3 possible things that could be going on, even if you don't
right.
know for sure, and
right.
just say, well, it might be A, it might be B, and it might be C, and then, you know, play with it that way
okay.
and then go back home and validate what you're, because you've got really strong instincts, we all do, and so even if we want to go back and kind of explore and evaluate and analyze, as we're playing today, just, you know, make up a few that might be possible and figure out how you would handle it if it was true.
Right, right. Okay.
Great, great. Brian, where do you want to take aim?
I want to take aim on setting the example, because I think we are all good in my family about recognizing when we're triggered. And I know for myself, I need to set a better example of verbalize that, which I do if I don't specifically have triggered. It becomes obvious that I'm triggered and everyone's aware of it. But once I am triggered, I want to take aim on making sure I set the example with how to deal with the fact that I'm triggered. So, you know, if we kind of have our game plan is we're going to kind of separate, we're going to verbalize we're triggered, and we're going to kind of do our de-escalation thing. I want to make sure that I'm following that plan as well and don't make it worse for everyone. Right. So I want to make sure
that
you need to go to your room and enforce that, or I need to go where the rest of us are going to go somewhere else until you de-escalate.
So what I'm hearing is that you're going to take aim on being consistent with the process that you guys have already talked about in terms of managing triggers at home.
Right. And I'm going to,
okay.
I want to make sure that I'm taking aim and not letting myself be the one who further escalates the situation.
Okay.
Right.
Perfect. Aaron, yep, great. Aaron.
Well, I don't know how these 2 triggers relate to each other. Well, I do, so I don't know which one to take aim on. So
okay.
I want to take aim on myself because I'm the one who gets so triggered and upset with the behavior, and then my mood impacts the family. But one of the things that triggers me is my middle daughter, Karina, her just zaniness. She gets real wacko and wild and goofy and silly, and it immediately triggers me. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of have an idea of some of the things that trigger her to get real crazy and silly. So I don't know, do I work on keeping her, you know, working on her triggers, or do I work on my trigger of her being crazy and silly and wild?
Well, it's a great question, Erin, because here's the thing. It's like, if you got your child to stop doing this thing, then you wouldn't have to deal with your own stuff.
Right.
right? And so I think that's the thing is that, you know, if the behavior is genuinely causing trouble for them,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, eventually it may be a behavior that you want to change. You may find that if you change your reaction that, you know, there's a good thing about being zany and crazy, and that, you know, finding ways to let her be zany and crazy when she wants to, but manage it when it's maybe not as helpful. You'll definitely be more able to do that if you're managing your trigger, because we'll talk about this more in a minute. When you're triggered, you're not problem solving.
Right.
So it's like you get into that place and she's being zany and you get triggered. It's like this must stop right now, which is not a problem-solving mode to be in. So my gut, what's your gut saying about which way to start?
I think with you, the way you just explained it, I think it's got to be me.
Okay. Great. Awesome.
Just choose that zany is a lot better than defiant and destructive.
That's true.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I love it. I love the word zany, wackiness.
She's very zany.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Shelley, where do you want to take aim?
Well, I kind of have a similar situation in that I don't know if it is something I should deal with my son or if it's really me that I need to deal with. But the issue has been that he has been lying recently, quite frequently, about important things as well as simple mundane things, like the important things he's lied about his schoolwork. You know, do you have this sheet that should be, you know, that appears to have come home? Nope, I already have it all done. Do you have your math homework? Yep, I already finished it and I turned it in. And then he told the teacher, nope, I left it at home. So lying both to us and the school, which is very concerning. And then the mundane things are like, did you brush your teeth this morning? And I wasn't physically near the bathroom to see if he did or not. And he said, yep, I did. And we were actually going somewhere. And I said, okay, and did you pack your toothbrush? And he said, yep, I got it. And we had actually asked him about two or three times. You've got everything packed, including your toothbrush? Yep, I got it. And, you know, continued to lie about it. And then come to find out, he hadn't brushed his teeth and he didn't pack his toothbrush, which isn't really, you know, a huge thing, but it's from the serious to the mundane. So,
can I make a suggestion, Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
So with you, I'm going to go the different direction. So I'm going to suggest that you take aim on dishonesty, and I'm using that word specifically because I'm wondering if you are willing to consider that lying is wanton, and dishonesty may not be completely wanton. And so I'm choosing my words specifically. Does that resonate for you?
Yep.
Okay. And so I'm gonna give you homework right now that you can write down to do later. But there's a couple of blogs out on the website that I wrote around lying and our kids and lying. Elaine did as well. And they're great articles and really good food for thought. And that'll help you to kind of look at it from his perspective. But the reality is that if you focus in on lying, you may find, or dishonesty, that you may find that managing your triggers around it is the most powerful thing you can do as a start. You know, so if you can stay calm when it happens and not get triggered by it, it'll help you to stay in problem-solving mode so you can help him figure out what he needs to help him to be more honest and forthcoming with the truth. How does that resonate for you?
Yep. Nope. That sounds good.
Great. Let me just double check and see. Nobody else joined us. Cool. So we are talking about triggers today. And, you know, those of you who know me know that this is like one of my favorite things. And I firmly believe that we are brought here on this planet to teach the things we most need to learn. And that's why triggers is such an important thing for me, because I like kind of am a walking, talking time bomb sometimes, and I'm a recovering yeller. And I really have figured out that understanding the science of triggers is such an important part of the family dynamic. And whether you're working on your own triggers or your kids' triggers, the reality is that it's such an automatic sort of thing that happens. And it's really just like, if you think about, you know, if you ever touched a stove by mistake and it's just like your hand snaps back and it's just like all of a sudden this instantaneous, intense movement that your arm just does automatically. Triggers are exactly the same way. And the reality is that for many of us, we don't really have a lot of control over it. It just happens so automatically. We it's almost like we wake up and it's like, oh my gosh, I got triggered. And I have no idea that I was triggered. I didn't even realize I was getting triggered. And then all of a sudden I'm really upset, or I'm yelling, or I'm angry, or I'm hiding in the closet if we're a flight kind of person. But, you know, triggers are those moments where something pushes our button and we go into that, you know, kind of fight or flight mode. And the precursor to fight or flight, just so you know, when people start to get stressed and agitated, might be that you tend to go on the offensive. And our kids do this a lot, where they tend to be like, no, it's, you know, it's her fault or she did it. Or they go on the defense. It's like, no, I didn't do it. You know, you can't blame me and it's not my fault. And, you know, so that moment before completely triggered might look more like on the offensive or on the defensive. But, you know, so in that moment when we get triggered, you know, the problem solving part of the biology of getting triggered. So the triggered part comes from like real primal danger sorts of situations. And so it comes from, you know, imagine the caveman out in the wilderness and all of a sudden a mountain lion comes and the caveman needs to be able to act really, really fast to run away from the mountain lion, or the bird needs to be able to run away. Or if, you know, you think about the stories you hear about the moms who are able to pick the cars up off their kids before they get crushed and they have these superhuman strengths. Well, the energy, the biology behind those instances, it's actually called catabolic energy, is really designed to be this really intense automatic thing that happens when there's a real emergency. And the challenge is that our brain doesn't know the difference between a mountain lion and when our kid gets an F in a class, right? So that happens to be one of my triggers, right? And so it's kind of like, but your brain goes, it's a threat, and it reacts, and it creates energy, and it creates hormones, and we go into this kind of fight or flight mode. And the important, there's several important parts of this, but the first one is that it happens automatically, and the second thing is that when it happens, the problem-solving part of our brain literally shuts down, and we go into the primal part of our brain, that more animalistic part of our brain, when we're just in fight or flight. And that's really the only choices we have. And so if we really want to solve a problem as opposed to, you know, being in search and destroy and fixing mode, we've really got to find a way to get back up into the problem-solving part of our brain or stay in the problem-solving part of the brain. And it's the same thing with our kids. When our kids get triggered and stressed out and all this other stuff, the problem-solving part of their brain shuts down, and so if we want to engage them in a conversation about how to fix the missing assignments, and they're triggered or they're stressed out, until we can help them to calm down and to manage that trigger, it's really, really, really impossible for them to engage with us in a problem-solving conversation. So, it's important to know that it happens automatically and that it is something that's biology. So there's a four-step process, and I apologize, this isn't in the workbook, but there's lots of articles, again, on it on the site, and if people have questions, like, we can always post it on Facebook, so tag us and let us know. But there's a four-step process that we encourage for trigger management, and we call it, escaping the threat cycle is what we talk about, because that's that automatic, there's a trigger, there's a threat, I've got to do something. And the first one is to recognize your triggers. And this is really a great thing to do when you're not triggered, which is to really spend some time and go, okay, you know, what are some of the things that do set me off? Or what are the things that, you know, I've got parents who do trigger journals for their kids, so they kind of follow them around, and it's like they watch their kid has a meltdown. What was going on right before the meltdown? Or what time of day was it? Or what was going on? Were they hungry? Were they tired? Were they angry? You know, what was going on that, you know, that moment before they got triggered? And I have some parents that do it for themselves. So at the end of the day, they might, you know, journal a little bit and say, well, here's when I really got upset today. And if it's you that you're thinking about, I'd encourage you to not just notice the thing that triggered you. Like for me, one of my triggers is the online grade system. And I'm worried about what I'm going to see in the online grade system. But you want to ask yourself, not just what is the trigger, but what's the voice in your head say? And my voice in my head goes, oh my gosh, it's gonna work. What am I gonna find this time? I won't be able to do anything about it. I can't. This isn't my problem. What do I do? And it's this kind of feeling of feeling out of control. And that's what triggers me, is the feeling of out of control. And for a lot of us, it's fear that tends to trigger us. And there's some fear under that, whether it's I'm not a good parent, or my child's never gonna be able to make it, or they're going to be living on my couch when they're 28, or they're going to end up in jail, or, you know, we kind of go into that worst case sort of thing. So understanding and managing your triggers is the first thing, and that's more of a prevention strategy. The second thing is to reclaim your brain, so that when you begin to notice that you are getting triggered, it's important to, before you get completely escalated, if you can, to take some action. So whether it's a couple deep breaths, whether it's giving yourself a timeout and, you know, kind of taking some space, Water is a really great trigger manager, and I use it all the time. I keep a glass of water on my desk, and my parents who walk around with water bottles because, you know, I mentioned that you go to that primal animalistic part of your brain when you get triggered. If you drink a couple sips of water, the animal in your brain goes, oh, we're at the water hole. Things must be safe now. I don't have to be triggered anymore. And it really does actually physically calm your brain down to drink water. So once you kind of have reclaimed your brain, the next thing is to choose a different perspective. And so the thing that triggered you in the first place, so defiance is a great example that tends to trigger a lot of parents. My child, I asked my child to do something and they either looked at me and said no, or they just didn't do the thing that I said to do, and so it feels like defiance. And so once you calm down, being willing to consider something that a perspective that's just a little bit different. So instead of my child is defiant or I have a bad child, it could be, well, I have a kid who's having a really difficult time being being respectful right now. Or Shelley, you were talking about lying. Instead of saying, oh my gosh, my child is lying to me, it's like, wow, my kid's really having a hard time being honest about this situation, which is a subtle shift. But you problem solve very differently when if you say my kid's a liar than if you say my kid's having a very difficult time being honest right now. And so sometimes it's just spinning the situation and being able to look at it a little bit different. And then the fourth step is to move forward from the new perspective, which, again, is kind of re-engaging in problem solving. So it's, you know, understand your triggers, reclaim your brain, choose a new perspective, and then move forward from the new perspective. So, yeah, hopefully this kind of gives you an overview of triggers and gives you a sense of why it's just so important, and we talk about this a lot, that staying calm is keeping yourself calm and then keeping your kids calm is such a critical piece of this whole thing because you really want to stay and engage in problem solving rather than more of that fight or flight reaction. So I'm curious kind of what comes up for you guys as I share this information.
When you were just talking about, this is Shelley, when you were just talking about the choosing perspective, that really resonated with me because that is the way I go. Why are you lying to me versus, you know, you're having a hard time being honest? And it really would, something as simple as that would change my perspective. And I thought, too, in the same way that I would talk to him then, you know, ask him what's stopping him from being honest versus, you know, why did you lie to me? You know, what's going on? Like, there's something wrong, but it's really more what stopped, you know, is there something that stopped you that I can help with? So simple ways that you, you know, put it into different terms would make a big difference, I think, all around.
Well, and I think that, yeah, and you're right, and I love that. I think the only thing I would add, honestly, Shelley, and remind me, he's 10. He probably doesn't know. I mean, that's the reality is that our kids don't know and don't realize. And again, going back and reading that article, they might, you know, he might be trying to save face, or it might be a working memory issue, in all honesty, with things like, I know that my kids, feeding the dog is a great example of something where it looks the same every single day. And so they remember feeding the dog yesterday and their brain goes, oh yeah, I fed the dog. And it's really that without a structure that says, I fed the dog today, yes, I've checked off a box or something like that, they really don't realize that it was yesterday when they fed the dog and not today. So he may not know, but you're right that if you can stay in that sort of curiosity space instead of the, you know, I've been assaulted kind of space, you're going to handle it very differently. Who else?
Hey, this is Erin. I think in terms of my issue with Karina and just getting real hyper and crazy, I like the idea of thinking of it in a different perspective, like you said, instead of, you know, she's being so wild, why won't she listen, why won't she stop, you know, she's having a hard time right now. And I know that in my problem-solving mode, I know that she's having a hard time calming herself down, but in my triggered mode, I just get angry. So I guess claiming my brain and then taking that different perspective is my key.
So, Erin, do you have a sense of what the voice in your head says in that moment before you get triggered about the wackiness?
Yeah, it's that I think it goes to pretty much all of my triggers is that I'm totally out of control. And so mm-hmm. if I say, girls, that's enough, you know, they're getting wild wrestling, you know, and it inevitably turns into somebody's hurt. If I say, knock it off, it's time to stop, whatever, and it doesn't stop, that's when I think that's the thing that I feel so out of control. I don't know how to manage, make them stop. And so that's what triggers me. It's the feeling of total out of control.
Yeah, and that, you know, and that's really common for a lot of us is that if we've had some area in our life, and a lot of times it's just our kids, it's like where things have really gotten out of control. And we've got a mom in another group who has had her child throw things at her and has been injured. And it's not, you know, again, it's that it's not he's doing it wantonly. It's just literally it got so out of control and she doesn't know how to fix it. And it's like you get scared. Or if you've a lot of clients that I have, spouses who have addiction issues and their life feels really out of control, we tend to want to grab control more severely. And that voice in our head says, whatever happens, you cannot lose control. You've got to stay in control. That's how we survive. And so it's really pretty normal. And so maybe part of it is just assuring yourself in that moment that things are okay and things will be safe and you'll figure out how to handle it. So how does that resonate, Karen?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like yesterday we're at the grocery store and she was in her hyper mood running and twirling around and, you know, not being bad, but just being not appropriate for the grocery store. And that feeling of I can't make her stop, I keep asking her, I keep telling her, hold on to the cart, whatever it is. And that's what makes me so angry that I can't make it stop. And then, you know, when you're in public, there's people and everything else. So you're right, it's shifting that whole perspective.
Well, and that adds a feature because a lot of times there's embarrassment there on top of it. And so we feel shame, frankly, that we've got these kids that are misbehaving. And I don't know if that resonates for you, but it's kind of like you've got a kid who's melting down in Starbucks and it's like everybody's looking at me and, oh, my gosh, they all think I'm a bad mom and maybe I am a bad mom and, oh, this is terrible. And, you know, and it starts to, you know, the voice in our head starts to creep through.
Right.
So, yeah, awesome. Brian, I'm going to ask you again to share. You were saying that you guys kind of have already a process that you're going to use when anybody gets triggered, it sounds like. And I think that this is really great tool to use. It's kind of like, okay, everybody gets triggered. It's normal to get triggered. It's okay to get triggered. And here's everybody has to have a strategy for what you're going to do when you get triggered. And it could be the same. It could be different. But is that the direction you guys are going in? And so share it with the group again, Brian.
Yeah, so I am also a walking, ticking time bomb and a recovering, obviously, not recovered, but recovering yeller. And so I'm getting double teamed while I'm on this call because my wife is also texting me. You're supposed to be on your call right now. And the last thing she was doing, we were going back and forth to triggers here, and she said, this I thought was really great insight, but the easiest thing for me to remember is that when Theo is melting down, he is really asking for help. He is not attacking you or doing anything personally. He is saying, in quotes, Dad, I can't handle this right now and I'm scared. Please help me figure this out. So if that doesn't make you feel like a little person that you don't react properly to his call for help, that's a great thing to remember. But for us, the process of dealing with these triggers is we all agree that when we're triggered, that we need kind of to give ourselves a timeout. And so we need to kind of verbalize it and say, I'm having a hard time controlling my emotions right now. I'm either going to go to the other room or let's just end this conversation and take a pause and come back to it. And the key is not to just take a pause and come back to it when you're ready, but the pause and come back to it needs to be until everyone is ready. So that's kind of our going in strategy, is that whoever is triggered needs to kind of remove themselves from the situation. But then the backup is if the person who's triggered can't do it, then the other needs to say, I'm going to go ahead and remove myself from the situation. That's what we try to tell the other kids too. Like if one of them's getting out of control, then the others can say, hey, I see that you're having a hard time. I'm going to kind of go somewhere else. And you know, that way I don't get myself hurt or become part of the problem rather than the solution.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think that a couple of things in what you said, Brian. The first one is, you know, when you do separate yourself, one of the things that's really important, especially with younger kids, is that you make a commitment to coming back. Because a lot of times, if we walk away from our kid who's triggered, it gives them a sense of abandonment because they do feel out of control. And so it's important to say, let's take a break for 5 minutes. You go do this. I'm going to go do this. And then let's come back and talk. You know, so you're making a commitment to coming back so that you're in case separation is a trigger for them as well. It's just something to think about. And then the other thing, Brian, that kind of stood out as you were saying it is like, does anybody need a mantra to remember that we really cannot parent effectively when we're triggered? And that's exactly what you were saying. It's like when you're triggered, you're not problem solving. And it takes parenting, effective parenting really does take problem solving and not fixing. Or not, I call it search and destroy mode. When I get triggered, I go into search and destroy mode. This must end and it must happen right now. And that's not an effective way of parenting. You know, it's an effective way of handling an emergency, right? So if your house is on fire, you want that part of your brain to be engaged. But when you're trying to work with challenged kids, it's not as effective. So thanks for sharing that, Brian. Anything else you would throw in?
Yeah, I agree. I want to immediately fix things, and I verbalize what is going to work as a fix for me. But that's not, I mean, that doesn't work in interpersonal relationships because both people have to kind of be fixing, and you can't just fix like a broken piece of machinery, right? I mean, it's not the same. It needs to be an ongoing thing. So that's a good point to remember is we can't fix if we just go into crisis mode and the fixing we would normally do is a crisis mode that doesn't work in the interpersonal relationship.
So, Brian, when you think about the voice in your head, the moment before you get triggered, what are some, pick one particular situation maybe that you know triggers you more than anything else. What's that voice in your head say?
Control.
I feel out of control.
No, it's telling me to take control of the situation.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you say, hey, you need to do this, it's time for you to get up, and the kid's just still sitting there in bed, and you're like, you're not up. I'm awake, but you're not up and not moving. We've got to leave at a certain time. It's me to take control and start kind of barking out orders to boom, boom, boom. This is how we're going to get there. And it's take control, which you really can't control someone else.
So that was my next question, what's the
take control, and I need to speak back and say, wait a second, you can't take control. You've got to help the other person be successful rather than taking control.
Great. Love that. Okay. Other thoughts? Tatiana?
Yeah, I was just thinking about what Ryan said about taking control because as a mom, and, you know, this is the kind of mom that I am, is that I feel really connected feelings-wise to my son in terms of, you know, I want to allow him, you know, when he's stressed out and he has anxiety, I want to allow him to express his feelings. You know, if he needs to cry, I let him cry, you know, that kind of thing. And it's so easy as a mom to be sort of like kidnapped by the thought of, you know, I want my son to stop suffering. I want him to not feel this way. I want him to, you know, A, B, and C, right? And that can sometimes get in the way of, you know, truly helping because you're so attached to this need to remove the pain that you can easily lose perspective of what's needed.
Well, and you used the word kidnap. We actually call it amygdala hijack. You know,
I like that.
It literally is this animalistic sort of, you know, mama. You're describing like a mama bear. You know, it's
exactly.
I'm going to protect my child, and I'm going to save him from danger, and pain is a danger. And
exactly.
So it makes perfect sense. So what would you need to tell yourself in that moment, Tatiana, to not go into mama bear mode?
Right. That's a very good question. I'm thinking that the first thing that comes to mind is, well, you know, does he need me to sort of like sync with him, or does he need me to truly, you know, be his advocate?
Okay, so let me shortcut you for a second. So what it sounds like you're doing is you're coming with compassion, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like, so the question you can ask yourself if you want to shift to that place of compassion is, what does he need? How can I help?
Right.
Something that's just so it's that you what you really want is to help him in that moment. So if you say,
right,
how can I help? Because what happens with that fight or flight energy is it needs action. And
yeah,
so if you give it something to do,
mm-hmm,
you know, then it'll help you to get out of that sort of frenetic, I've got to do something mode,
yeah,
to, okay, what can I do? And
right,
taking real action. So what,
right,
stands out for you? What could you do in those moments when the mama bear shows up?
Well, put the focus back on him and say, to quote unquote sophisticated question for him, but I don't want to make assumptions. So maybe ask him, you know, how can I help you with X, Y, and Z, or what would be helpful?
Okay, so wait,
right,
let me interrupt you. So Tatiana, how old is your son?
He's 8.
Okay, so on a scale of 0 to 10, how well does he really know what he needs in terms of help?
I'm going to say probably a 4.
Okay. All right. So most kids that are his age are not, it takes abstract thinking to understand what they need.
Right.
So you might say, you might create a menu of things that he could do to help him. You know, so if you have a common situation where he starts to get upset.
Right.
Then you might, you know, work with him when he's not upset,
mm-hmm,
and come up with a menu of five things. Or I've got some parents who use like a calm box, you know, and it's like they've got five toys or a book and a whatever else in a box.
Okay.
And it's kind of like then you have a menu. So it's like, and some of the parents that have younger kids or kids with less developed executive function will do pictures. So it's like,
uh-huh,
buddy, you seem upset right now. Which of your calming tools do you want to use?
Right.
Do you want to read a book? Do you want to go listen to the radio? Do you want to, whatever it is, so that you're giving him options and leaving the control with him, but you're doing it in a way that's not just what do you need? Because for most,
right,
of us,
yeah,
most of us, if you were to ask me what I needed when I'm triggered, I don't know that I could even really articulate,
yeah,
it. And I'm 52. I'm not 8. You know, so
right,
something
it's
to
open.
Think about.
Gotcha.
So, what do you think you want to do with that?
Well, the first thing would be to figure out what those what that calming menu is for him.
What do you know are some things already that help him to stay calm?
Physical touch helps.
Right, so give him a hug or
yeah,
you know, touching him on the shoulder.
Yep.
What else?
You know, definitely letting him cry, because he hears from other people that it's not okay to cry.
Right.
So I definitely want to honor that, because you know when I tell him that it's okay, then you know it's the water works, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know he feels truly that it's okay, that he has permission to do that. So I think that's another thing.
Okay. Well, and so you may come up with 3 others with him, or you may just start with those 2 things. And so,
right.
And then what do you want to do for yourself? What's your calming box look like?
You mean in the moment?
Yep.
Well, try the best I can to I guess, not get too attached to the story, I guess.
Cool. All right. Anyone else? Thoughts on triggers? What most gets in the way for you guys in terms of managing triggers?
Hey, this is Erin. I'd say for me, I mean, I get in the way. I just get angry, and I don't feel like I have any space or time to go and do anything to calm myself down. And so, I mean, I am the classic just deep breather, not out of meditative breathing, just out of sighing constantly, you know. And
I'm right there with you, Erin. I'm my biggest obstacle.
Yeah. And I remember, I mean, my mom was the same way, and my mom's wonderful, but my memory of her growing up was going, oh, shit. You know, and I don't want to be, I don't say shit, but I'm doing the sighing, and I feel like it's just that inner kind of trigger that's used to take a long time to get up to the level of triggered. Now it just goes from nothing to triggered.
Well, it's interesting you guys are saying that, because here's what I want to tell you, is that getting triggered is completely normal. It happens to everybody. I mean, everybody might have their own boiling point, and some of us might have a lowered temperature that's our boiling point, or a different escalation process. And so part of that is knowing your triggers, managing your triggers when you can. But I think that it's kind of like our kids and their distractibility. It's not like they're going to wake up tomorrow and not be distracted. What they need to do is to learn how to manage it when they are distracted. And I still remember, you know, saying this to my kid when he was in third grade. It's like, your brain's going to get distracted. It's not your job to keep it from getting distracted. It's your job to jump back in when you notice you're distracted, or when somebody else says, hey, buddy, you're distracted. And it's the same thing with us when we're triggered. It's not our job to not get triggered, because it's going to happen. And, yes, you can do things to avoid triggers and to manage triggers. But I sent a text yesterday to my son that he's like, you know, you got triggered and you're a bad role model. And I'm like, I'm not a bad role model, because being triggered is normal. If I was triggered all the time and I wasn't working on it, then yeah, that would be a bad role model. But getting triggered is really normal. So give yourself some grace, guys, because it happens to everybody, literally. You may not see, there's some people you just may not see it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, so let's kind of crawl in. Is there any, we have time for a little bit of laser coaching, I think. Is there anybody with a particular hot topic that wants some advice or ideas on?
You guys go for it. I know I've been the source of laser coaching a couple times, which is awesome, and I'm happy to do it again, but I don't want to take anybody else's opportunity.
Y'all are being nice to each other.
Okay, well, I'll go.
Okay. So do you want to talk about wackiness? You want to shift and do something else?
Yeah, let's talk about the wackiness. And in particular, I mean, I'm fine with somebody in a silly mood, but in particular, I think she and one of our counselors that we see told us that she also feels that Karina is the middle one with ADHD, that she relates to our older one, who's 17 months older and is kind of critical and tough on her. She relates to her by being wacky and crazy, and she doesn't know how to be with her, so she gets silly, and that's the way she gets people to kind of pay attention to her and have fun with her. And so she can be in a, you know, after school, she's eaten. I know her you know, brain is activated, she's doing fine. But the minute the other daughter gets in the car or we get home, it's the wackiness starts, and it's not just a little silly. I mean, it's hanging on her and noises and facial expressions and pushing everybody to the limit, like getting in people's personal space and
getting really wild.
So
when you get curious, what do you think she wants?
She wants that validation, I think, from her older sister.
Okay. So is her older sister in a position where she could reasonably give that to her, or is it going to be hard to
I think
draw
it's
that
hard.
Out?
They have a really, and that's a whole other thing for another day, but they have a real tough top-down sibling rivalry, and my older daughter has no patience or tolerance for Karina. And she's just real critical of her. She's the kind of person who wants kind of always to be the best at everything, and she's tough on her.
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple of things here, you know, that you could do. So number one is, you know, there could be some work with your older daughter to really figure out how to have some compassion
mm-hmm.
for her sister, and how to set a boundary, but to show her some love and some affection, and to, you know, to continue to talk to her and say, you know, my guess is that when she does this, she just really wants a hug, or she just really wants some positive something from you. You know, is there something you could do in that moment rather than pushing her away that might, you know, and help her to come up with some other things she could do that might redirect the energy instead of, you know, triggering
right.
it even further. Does that make
and
sense?
And she feeds into it, too. I mean, she, I think, has gotten into the older one has gotten into the mode of that's how we interact together. So then.
Well, and so that's the other thing of it. It's kind of like is to really going to get clear on maybe you have some wacky time, and maybe, you know, maybe 10 to 10:30 every Saturday morning is wacky time, and everybody is just kind of off the chart wacky or whatever it is. And
mm-hmm.
and that's when you're that way, and you structure it a little bit more. So you give everybody the time. So there are times when it's okay to be crazy, and there's times when it's not okay to be crazy. And then you help her to become discerning about when is a good time and when isn't a good time. And you start by having very structured time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then the other thing is just kind of there's some social skills stuff here. And I don't know whether the
mm-hmm.
therapist you're working with is doing some social skills, but it's kind of like noticing body language, noticing eye contact, noticing that sort of stuff. And she's going to have to develop that over time. But there's some opportunity and some work there.
Right. Those are things
yeah.
I talk to her about. You know, I noticed she did the same thing when my other daughter had a friend over, and she was just being totally obnoxious and, like, burping and making noises in their faces and just trying to get them to laugh. And they're looking away and clearly giving her a lot of body language that they weren't interested. And so I did sit down with her afterwards, and she said, I just want them to laugh. And, you know, we did have to have a good talk about they're not showing you that they think it's funny, so you don't do more of it. You need to back off, you know. And so,
right.
yeah, she definitely needs work on that skill.
Yeah. Well, and there's lots of social skills sorts of stuff and tools. And I know we've got some social skills resources on the website. And, you know, again, that's another great thing to post in Facebook if you're looking for some ideas or some books or something like that to focus on
okay.
social skills. Okay. Cool. All right, so let's go to our checkout. And can somebody tell me what page of the workbook we're on? Because I totally forgot to mention the chapter and the page of the workbook. Does anybody have their workbook open?
I'm just taking notes.
Okay. We're on the trigger chapter, whatever it is. And so there's four questions we ask at the end of every session. So take a few notes for yourself, and then I would love to hear from each of you, you know, so the first one is, what did you focus on or pay most attention to? What became clear? What was an aha you had? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And what do you need to set yourself up for success? So want to hear, you know, just from each of you, you know, an aha and what you want to do moving forward. So take a few notes, and then would love to hear from whoever when you're ready.
This is Shelley. I had a couple of ahas as we talked today. I think the biggest one being that choosing my perspective and how much that will impact my triggers, both in the specific area that I was taking aim at, but even broader too in all the other areas that we may struggle. So really being purposeful that I take that perspective. And then a couple of the actions that I'm going to take from today is going out and reviewing those articles that you mentioned. I think those will help me even more when I think about perspective and how that can impact, as well as then I did take notes on some of your actions that you can do to stop triggers, you know, the stopping and, you know, having some water or the breathing, actual things that I can try. So those were my takeaways for today.
Okay, great. Who else?
Hey, this is Erin. I would say, obviously, I was focusing on my triggers. I think my aha, the one you just mentioned, taking time for craziness and just making it kind of like a real crazy time would be fine. But the other one, I think, is that I really need to talk with the kids about triggers and about how it works and how they're feeling, all of them, and maybe have like a little family meeting and discuss it and what can we do about it. And I like the idea of the calming box. I need one for myself. And also, I think mainly the big action step is just really discussing that with the kids and having them, like you said, get buy-in, and then having everybody understand that they can basically push pause on a situation and walk away and come back to discuss it. I think that would work with all three of them.
Awesome. Love it. Okay. Brian, Tatiana, who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Go for it.
So my focus has been on anxiety, my son's anxiety, and in the process of talking about it, I think my aha has been to realize that there's also a level of anxiety or stress related to, you know, when he gets in that mode, then I get in that mode, right? And how that could potentially be contributing to the problem. So what I want to focus on in terms of the next step is I love your suggestion about the calming box and, you know, continue to figure out what else calms him down, but also as well apply that to myself. And then again, brainstorm on the, you know, all the scenarios for triggers and, you know, anxiety triggers for my son.
Great. Awesome. All right, Brian, take us out.
Okay, I had a ton of ahas. You know, one of the bigger ones, my wife texted me saying, hey, remember, keep the focus on this, and that it's so simple, yet it's so difficult to remember in the moment. So I'm going to really try to make that happen. And I like the idea of the calming box for myself and for the kids, but I think of it more as maybe a menu, and it may help me. So if I verbalize I'm triggered and what I'm going to choose for my menu and then work with the kids to kind of have their menu, you know, it may be, I think that you may be triggered. Do you need a hug? Do you need space? Do you need to let it out? Do you need to, you know, some physical heavy work or whatever it is? But to maybe have that menu, because they may not be able to have a hard time verbalizing exactly what they want. So just to have that menu and let them run down and choose from it is, I think, the most helpful for me. And then I'll also hopefully be modeling that with my own menu as well. And I'll say, I'm triggered. I'm going to select this option and see if it works. Let them select an option. And then, like you said earlier, Diane, make that commitment to let's check back in 5 minutes or whatever time it is and try to move forward.
That makes sense. The thing I would that you reminded me of I didn't talk earlier about is you might want to have a code word as well. And so it's and sometimes this can backfire, but sometimes it works really well, especially after you do it for a long time. But the word trigger is a code word in our house, and we can all say it. And the commitment is that if one of my kids say, "Mom, it looks like you're triggered," I don't yell at them, because in my triggered voice, I take a deep breath and go, Okay. You know, and they do the same thing. So it's like, it's not fair to say, I'm not triggered. But so that's how it could backfire on you. But if you can find a word that anybody can call that really doesn't mean, you know, it's not kind of pointing the finger, you're upset, you're to blame here, but it's really kind of say, hey, the conversation's getting hot here. All right. Great call today, everybody. So we are on, this is the last call of the year. We will meet again 3 weeks from now on Thursday the 7th. I hope everybody has a Happy New Year, Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas, and great call today, everybody. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everyone.
The moderator has left the conference.